And welcome back to another episode of Mass Monologues. Today, I have John Clements with me. He is an editor, a blogger, and he wants to share some business insights as well. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us about who you are and what you do?
For sure. So yeah, so my name is John Clements, and I do run an editing and writing agency. So I work with businesses to help them just create really good content that resonates with people, and that can also help their readers become more invested in their companies and their services, become customers, become clients, all that kind of thing. And so I've actually been doing that for a couple of years now. We can probably get into this more if you want, but I started out on this venture in the middle of COVID because I lost my job. So I used to be a quality manager for about 5 years in the corporate world. And the last 5 years, I hated it. I did not want to go to work in the morning. I would wake up with a sense of dread. I would go to bed with a sense of dread. But I was scared. I was scared to do anything about it. Yeah. But fortunately, yeah, I lost out because of COVID. So it forced me to reconsider and find something else. So yeah, that's a bit of my background. We can go more into it, but that's where I come from.
Okay, so I just want to go back to your point about losing your job because of COVID. How did you make that transition from a corporate environment into being like your entrepreneur, into creating your own business, marketing your services? Because that's a leap. It's like this transition from a corporate mindset, this employee mindset, to an entrepreneurial mindset. How did you make that transition? And what tips or tricks did you consult anyone?
Boy, that's a huge topic. I would say, of course, in my situation, I was forced into it because, again, with all the shutdowns with COVID, my company I was working for, they literally couldn't pay my salary. That's why I got let go. There was no performance issues, no nothing like that. I just, it's an economic casualty. So what I did was, first of all, I took a couple of weeks where I just didn't do anything because I figured at that point I probably earned it. Stress. But then I started thinking, okay, what else can I do? Because if the next 30 years of my life involves sitting in a fabric covered box, I don't want to have anything to do with that. So I thought to myself, there has to be something else I can do. And so I started looking into things, and I tried a few things, but one thing that I've always enjoyed is writing and actually editing. So I'm the nerdy friend you have when you're writing a college paper and you want someone to look over and file with that. But that's me. That's what I would do for fun, because I'm a complete nerd. So I say, okay, I have this skill set and I enjoy doing this, editing, writing. I wonder if anyone will pay me to do this. And so I started looking into it, and I realized people will pay me to do this. And I'm a little over 40 years old. So I was a little behind the times with respect to all of the opportunities the internet provide. So once I started down that path, I found this site called Upwork, where you can work as a freelancer and you can do things like editing and writing, and people will pay you. And so that's honestly how I got my start, was just finding other opportunities online to just meet people and get clients and start doing work that I enjoyed. And a lot of it was just, and it still is, just that fear of having to go back to the corporate world. That fear is a very strong motivator for me.
Yes.
So anything I can do to not go back to the corporate world, that's what I want to do. So fortunately, I've been able to make this work. And you know what? I absolutely love just helping businesses, helping clients, helping people take their ideas and get them down on paper in a way that's exciting and resonating and engaging, and that helps them and helps them grow their business. So yeah, that's the Reader's Digest version of how I got started.
Yes. You say you use Upwork. I'm not familiar with that platform, but I am familiar with platforms such as Fiverr, which is another freelancing platform. So can you explain a little bit about it and how you would become a freelancer on that platform?
Absolutely. So Upwork is very similar to like freelancer.com or Fiverr. There's a number of them out there. I had success with Upwork, so that's what I went with. Upwork's very easy to get started with. Let's say, like me, you want to maybe jump into editing, or maybe you want to explore being a virtual assistant or a contract project manager, whatever it might be, software developer, any of this. You can do this all on Upwork. And it's really as simple as going to their website and just signing up for an account. And once you do that, you have to go through their training, which they do a great job of onboarding you. And then once that's done, you can start building out your portfolio and your profile, and you can start applying for jobs. And it's as simple as going to the jobs page and doing some searching and finding jobs you think you might do well and submitting a proposal. So it's all done on the site. It's all very slick. It's all very easy to do. And the best part of all is it's free. There's no cost. You can pay for some services, but you don't have to. And so, yeah, that's really where I got my start. And it is, I will say, the value you get out of it is going to equal the effort you put into it. You're not going to get a sale on your very first proposal. It's going to take a while. But if you can be dedicated and spend time every single day working at it, submitting for jobs, refining and polishing your proposals and your profile, you can see success with that.
And this begs the question, how many proposals did you have to make before you got your first sale, just so others know when to expect to get their first sale? Because I feel as though in this day and age, people romanticize this idea of becoming a millionaire overnight, where it's the fast route to success. And I just want people to know that it's actually a slow climb to the top of the mountain, or it's a marathon and not a sprint. So do you mind sharing about how long, how many proposals it took for you?
Yeah. So Upwork is actually pretty open about this. They say it takes about 15 proposals to land a job. And that's my experience as well. I don't know what the percentage is, but yeah, one out of every 15 or so. It probably took me, I would say close to a dozen to get my first job out of that. So yeah, that's pretty average. And I will totally agree with you. I've been an entrepreneur for 3 years and I'm still not a millionaire. It is definitely a slow climb. Maybe one day though.
Yes. No, that's not too bad. I'm just thinking about it. 15 proposals. How do you make those proposals? Do you just get in touch with the company or the client, or you just post it on the Upwork website and people come and find you?
Yeah. What happens is, if you're a business looking for just to fill a position or looking for some work done, you will actually go and post a job where you can, it's just like any other job site where you can post what you're looking for, how much you're willing to pay, what the job entails. So you're actually going to respond to that job offer with your proposal. So it makes it real convenient. You don't have to go just posting things at random, but there's specific jobs that you're going to apply for.
And can you speak about some businesses or companies you've worked with and what you've helped them do? Maybe it was a product description, maybe it was a website page. I'm just interested to know what the work you've done has looked like and if it's varied.
I have done all kinds of work. It's been pretty fun. I'm a kind of person who doesn't like to do the same thing every day. So if I can mix it up, that's great. So what have I done? Oh, I have edited countless blogs. So that means things like fixing grammar and spelling, of course, but also making wording and flow better, rewriting introductions and conclusions to make those more accessible to readers. So I've done that. I've actually done writing as well. So I was a ghostwriter for a functional medicine doctor. I wrote his weekly newsletter for about 18 months. So that was fun. I've also written a whole host of podcast ad scripts for this particular client. So I've done some podcast ad writing. One client I've got to work on a little bit later today is, there's a company on Amazon. There's a Chinese company who sells on Amazon US, and they send me all of their product copy and all of their user manuals and all of their scripts. And then I take it and basically turn that from broken English into English that American speakers and readers can understand much better. So that's another thing that I do, is helping people who maybe English isn't their first language. Mm-hmm. You know, they might do some copy or write a blog post or a newsletter, and then I can come in and make it sound like a native speaker actually wrote that. And I'm actually here to tell you, that's the hardest thing that I do, but it's also a rewarding thing. So yeah, I do all of those things and more. It really just depends on what the client needs.
Yes. And I'm wondering, because of the rise of the use of AI technologies like ChatGPT and other writing technologies, have you seen a decline in the work that you're doing, or has it been or stayed stagnant?
I'm currently going through a bit of a decline, but I don't think it's AI related. I think it has much more to do with inflation, at least here in the United States. I think that's taken money out of businesses and people's pockets. So I think that's a bigger issue. But as far as AI goes, it hasn't impacted my work a ton, but I've been digging into it though, because I think that it may. Here's the biggest takeaway that, as an editor and a writer, that I have, is I don't have a nice way to say this, but AI boring.
I agree. I have to agree with you.
So if you have been researching it and I've found articles that are explaining AI in writing, and I'm going, this article is terrible. I don't even want to read this article. It's so bad. And so then I go figure out, oh, it's AI. AI wrote it. So if you want bland, terrible writing, then use AI. If you want good writing that resonates with your readers and actually gets your readers to do something you want them to do, then you need to hire a human being to do that. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
No, I completely agree. I believe that AI is good if you need to write emails sometimes, if you need a quick email draft, or if you need something that's supposed to be more formal, but nothing for creative writing or anything that's supposed to resonate with an audience. Because I've spoken to some of my friends who are also authors, and they've tried using AI to write a poem or write a story, and it comes out just with this dense piece of writing that doesn't connect with anyone. It's monotone. And I see what you're saying there. Sometimes you actually need that human quality to connect with somebody else.
Exactly. Actually, that reminds me, I had this epiphany the other day about AI. It's exactly what you said. AI cannot tell a story about something that it experienced because it doesn't experience anything.
Yeah.
And stories are so foundational to whether it's songwriting or writing a novel or even a blog post for your business. Like stories are, we've been telling stories since we could talk as a species. So to not be able to do that with AI, it's a big drawback in my opinion.
Yes, no, I completely agree and see where you're coming from. With your business, like your copywriting, your editing, have there been moments or times where you had to send it back to the company? They said, you know what, this doesn't resonate with our brand. It's not what we're looking for. And then have they sent it back to you and you've had to edit it and revise it? Or how does that revision process work for you?
Yeah, going back and forth is a completely normal part of the process. It doesn't happen so much with editing. Editing tends to be pretty cut and dry. But as far as writing clients go, yeah. In fact, I've got one right now where I'm working with a client to make sure to get the voice right. We're writing in the style of a person's voice as if they were writing it. And we submitted the first draft. We didn't knock it out of the park. So we got feedback and now we've incorporated it. And I think if you're doing what I do, as long as you're okay with the fact that you're not always going to get it 100% correct the first time and are willing to incorporate feedback, like it's okay. No one besides you is expecting you to be perfect. So if you can drop that idea and just say, I'm going to give it my best and then I'll incorporate feedback and everyone will be happy. And that tends to be what happens. So yeah, feedback's just a normal part of the process.
And I'm wondering, as a freelancer, what does your day-to-day look like? Because obviously you're independent, you work for yourself. Do you have a routine or do you just work whenever you have time or whenever is most convenient for you?
I try to schedule my most important tasks during my, what I call being in the zone. So all of us have times of day when we are more energetic, have more focus, have more drive. For me, it's, you know, 8 to 10 in the morning and maybe 1 to 4 in the afternoon. So that's when I try to do the bulk of my work, especially if it's like writing something or recording a podcast. I try to do those things during those times because I end up doing a better job. I end up being more efficient. The quality ends up being higher. And then for the other times where I'm maybe not quite as in the zone, that's when I take care of other things like emailing or posting on social media or doing marketing and sales type activities, things that are maybe not
require as much energy.
Yeah,
or
they don't require as much energy and they're not
focus.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I understand where you're coming from, where sometimes you have all this focus, all this concentration, and you can write as much as you need. You can do as many podcasts as you want. But then there's other times where you're like, I just want to sit somewhere comfortable and go on my computer, post on social media, do whatever I need to do that it doesn't require as much effort. And there are those periods of downtime.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, that's an important point that I do want to mention is, so I do have a fairly routine schedule in my day-to-day. That's how I choose to do it. I don't know if I have to, but I choose to do it that way. But if you're a freelancer or an entrepreneur, something very important to know is you need to schedule downtime. So for me, I don't work on Friday nights. I don't work on Sundays. because if I don't set those boundaries for myself, I will just work all the time. So it's different from as an employee. You work from 9 to 5. That's my working hours. As a freelancer or an entrepreneur or a business owner, you're working all the time, whether you're working or just thinking about working. So to block off those times and say, okay, during this time period, I will not work. I will not think about work. That's how you maintain what you're doing over the long course. That's how you avoid burnout. So that's an extremely important point I just wanted to bring up.
No, I believe that's a vital tip that every entrepreneur needs, because a lot of the times we tend to be workaholics because that clock doesn't go off. We don't stop getting paid at a certain point in time. We get paid by the output we create. Yes, I want to talk about your marketing, because you say that you post on social media, you do email marketing, and do you combine your writing, the editing that you do into your social media posts? Maybe you do posts where you write, maybe it's a story and you do a question. How do you approach your marketing?
I do. So I've got a blog on my website. That's one aspect of it. So I make sure to tailor my blogs to where they have a really good introduction and they logically have good flow and they end with a strong call to action. So that's my foundation. And then from there, I will take those and I will pull out those valuable snippets throughout the article, and I might post it over on LinkedIn or on Facebook. And then say, if you want to, here's the value in this blog post. If you want to read more, click it, or DM me if you want to chat. So I try to post on LinkedIn at least once a day. I also post on Facebook and Instagram once a day. A lot of it is just driving to blog posts, or it's maybe, I've been doing a lot of editing quick tips on LinkedIn recently, where I'm just trying to provide value. Hey, if you're a content creator, here's a really quick thing you can do to make your content a little bit better. You can break up your paragraphs into shorter sections, because that helps people to read on their phone a lot better. So things like that, right? Just trying to provide value instead of just selling all the time. And then, of course, things like going on podcasts. Podcasts are this new marketing thing that we're all looking into. How do we get your name up? How do I get my name out there? How do I provide value to listeners? So between social posting, podcasts, I'm starting to think about how I can incorporate YouTube into it. I haven't done a whole lot over there yet, but I'm YouTube curious. So we'll see where that goes.
Yes. And with social media, it seems to be difficult to break through the clutter. Would you say that a lot of consistency has to do with that? Or what tactics or tools have you noticed have worked for you?
I'm very much still learning when it comes to social media, but I do know that consistency will solve about 80% of your problems. If you're just I don't know if there's even one or more correct tactics. I think choose a good one and be consistent. So that's the route that I follow. And I'm always trying to learn too. So every day I'm looking at other people's posts. What are they doing? Who can give me inspiration? Who's got this figured out? And I can go look at what they do and incorporate it. Being consistent, always trying to learn, and being flexible and open to new ideas. Those are the things I would encourage for social media or any kind of endeavor.
Yes. And I just want to jump back from the corporate environment to being an entrepreneur. What do you think is one lesson that you've learned from this entire experience of being a freelancer, creating your own business? And what would you say to your past self if you could go back and give yourself just one piece of advice?
If I could go back to my past self, I would say, don't wait so long. Jump in way sooner. I waited about 5 years too long to start doing this, and it cost me. I never went to the doctor, but I probably was depressed. I probably needed help and I didn't get it, and I should have done that too. There's no reason to be miserable in your job. And the biggest thing I've learned is that there will always be fear. There will always be the chance of failure and rejection, but it is so worth it to do it anyway. Fear actually will not kill you. Rejection will not harm you unless you let it. And so there's really nothing stopping you from doing what you want to do other than you. The more you can do to become resilient and lean in to those things that maybe make you a little afraid, but you really want to do them, that's the biggest mindset shift that I've experienced.
Yes. And when it comes to fear and rejection, how have you experienced fear and rejection in your business? And what did you do during those points of lows?
I'll tell you a story that's actually not a part of my business. This is another part of my story that I don't speak much about, but I will tell you. While I was trying to stand up my own editing business, I was also trying to plant a church. So I was trying to get that started again during the pandemic. So the timing wasn't great, but I gave it a try. And I gave it my all for a very long time, and it did not work out. We were not able to get our church going. And that really, that hurt. I'll probably carry that scar for my whole life. There was a lot of pain in that failure. And it was a very public failure too, because everyone at the church we were going to knew I was trying to do this.
Yes.
So going through that experience was very tough, very challenging. But I noticed that I still survived. I noticed that I'm still talking to you today. I noticed that my wife still loved me. I noticed that I still had all of my same friends, and no one thought any less of me for trying and failing at something. And so that's been a light bulb moment in my life, where I can go back when I have hard times, when maybe I don't land a client, or maybe something doesn't work out, or I make a mistake. And I can look back and say, I failed very publicly at this very hard thing, and I'm still just fine. I'm still me. Nothing changed. So if I can do that, if I can get through that failure, then I can get through this failure. And then the other piece of the puzzle for me was reading a book called Rejection Proof by Jia Jiang. Absolutely great book. Totally and revamped my view of what rejection is and isn't, and how to handle it in an emotionally healthy way. And yeah, I think having been through bad times and surviving, and those, now I can look back when I do have a rough day and say, you know what, I have survived worse. I can do this. I have a family and a community around me, and it's going to be okay.
No, it's so funny how once you get over that initial hump or that first failure, everything from there doesn't seem as intense, where your second failure is, oh, I've done this before. I know how to recover from this. And it's just doing that again and again, and you're able to recover quicker.
Yeah, I've become an expert at failure, which is a very strange thing to say, but I think I am.
Yes. Now, thank you so much. I want to shout out to your website, maybe your streaming platforms. Where can people find you, your social media?
Absolutely. If you want to learn more about me, or more about how you could start as an editor or a proofreader yourself, or if you have a blog or a website or a newsletter and you want someone to come in and help you make that even better and reach more people, it's super easy. You can go to my website. It's cedarpress.com. You can also find me at LinkedIn. You can look at my name, John Clements, or Cedar Press Proofreading. I will show up either place. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook, but I think LinkedIn, my website, are the best options.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate all the insights you shared, and thank you for listening, you listeners. And if you like this episode and you want more episodes like this, then please do share it with a friend or a family member, and we hope to see you next time.